Election College, Episode 312, JFK, Part 3.
Let's throw a political party. Face it, the political scene sucks, but did it always? It's time for Election College, and class is in session. Now, your hosts, Jason Goff and Ben Smith.
Is that right, Ben? Part 3?
I know. This is only the, second president we've done 3 episodes about? Well, 3 in a row, at least.
Yeah, and it's just crazy. Of course, we've already covered all of the end of his presidency.
Multiple times, yeah.
It's like conspiracy theories and all that. I don't know. Should we get into any of that, or am I jumping the gun?
Let's just turn this into a conspiracy theory podcast from now on.
Okay.
All right. Well, reintroduction. Welcome, everyone, to Election Conspiracy College. Never mind. We'll workshop that title and do it for next episode.
Ooh, I like that workshop. I'm on the floor right now recording because we just had this big, big storm here in Michigan, and like part of my RV flooded.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And then last week, if anybody was wondering, hey, where were you guys last week? Well, while we were recording, one of our rental properties was flooding. So I'm done with water.
Don't go swimming anytime soon, Jason.
Yeah. I'm hoping not to, because tomorrow I fly to California. We want that to be waterless.
Right.
Anyway, on January 20th, 1961, JFK is sworn in as the 35th president of the United States. And of course, this is the speech that we all know, right? The whole ask not what you can do for your country, or not, you know, the other way. Ask not what your country can do for you. Ask what you can do for your country.
Right.
Man, why do I always get that reversed?
The expectations are so high there, you feel like you have to get it just right, and you mess it up.
Yeah. The pressure. It's intense.
Well, Kennedy had a pretty good, as I think all presidents should, or all hopeful presidents even, but had a pretty good idea or mentality going into the presidency. He says, you know, hey, everything's not going to get done in the first 100 days I'm in office. As a matter of fact, it probably won't get done in the first 1,000 days. Maybe it won't even get done while I'm president. But, like, let's go ahead and start. Let's just start working on stuff. And I think that really kind of rang a bell, because there have been so many presidents before and so many presidents since that, you know, what's the first 100 days in office going to look like? We're going to fix everything in the first year. And it's just not realistic. But the Kennedy administration is really focused on, well, the world. And of course, you know, focused on the country as well. But there's just all sorts of stuff happening around the world. You got the Soviet Union. You got the ordeal with Cuba, the whole Bay of Pigs thing, you know. So Kennedy gets kind of a first, and everybody gets kind of the first impression of Kennedy as and being involved in all sorts of other countries around the world.
Yeah, it's interesting because here you had Eisenhower, who was very much trying to keep peace, right? Or establish peace. And Kennedy is faced with the Cold War. Pretty intense, because you got this Nikita Khrushchev guy. Man, we could do an episode on him, but he wasn't.
That would be interesting.
He wasn't elected to anything, but
yeah,
you know, you can just imagine his style. Pretty abrasive, right? And Kennedy kind of gets off on the wrong start with him, because Khrushchev is speaking to the Soviet people, saying, "Hey, America's bad," and, you know, democracies are bad and all that kind of stuff. Kennedy's like, hey, I'm going to take this personally. I'm going to bust you. And Charles de Gaulle was like, dude, just ignore them, don't pay attention to them. And, you know, the two get together, Khrushchev and Kennedy, in June of 1961.
Yeah. So they hashed some things out, of course, put an end to the Cuban Missile Crisis. Of course, our ordeals with Cuba have been, they've been longstanding. It seems like every now and then you see a little bit of, oh, we're gonna fix this. But so far, we're still not terribly buddy-buddy with Cuba. Or Russia, for that matter, for a lot of the pomp and circumstance and friendliness that's out there, there's still always this underlying lack of trust between the two countries. And that certainly was the case when Kennedy was in office as well.
Yeah. So out of that meeting with Khrushchev, like, what ends up happening is, you know, they put barbed wire up around West Berlin.
Yeah.
It's kind of ugly. It's very ugly, actually. And, you know, you got a divided Germany. What can you say? It's really bad.
How long did that last, Jason? 30 years or so?
Yeah, more than 30 years. I can remember when Reagan gave that speech about, you know, Gorbachev, tear down this wall.
Uh-huh.
Thinking, I can remember thinking, there's no way that's going to happen.
Then it did.
It did.
Yeah.
But I digress.
Yeah.
We digress.
Yes.
The Cuban Missile Crisis is horrible, right? Because, you know, our spy planes fly over Cuba, and we see that the Soviets are starting to construct intermediate-range ballistic missile sites there in Cuba. And this is in October, and Kennedy's faced with this dilemma. You know, do we go ahead and attack those sites? Do we risk nuclear war? Do we do nothing and have these missiles pointed to us? What do we do? And by the end of October, you know what happens. We stop a Soviet ship. Khrushchev says, okay, we'll dismantle the sites and all is cool. But my goodness, we were on the precipice of nuclear war right then and there.
Yeah, I think that's probably the closest, other than actually having, you know, nukes explode. That's probably the closest we've ever been to, you know, an actual nuclear war since then, or before then either. You can imagine what kind of legacy that would have left for Kennedy.
Yeah. Did any of your schools have bomb shelters?
I think that... So the elementary school I went to was fairly new when I went there, and the high school was brand new when I went there. But the high school I would have gone to, had they not built the new one, definitely had bomb shelters. And I was in there multiple times. Not in the bomb shelters, but was in the building multiple times. And I definitely remember seeing signs still up for the bomb shelters, or the fallout zone, or whatever they called them.
Mm-hmm. So, crazy stuff. I mean, yeah, it wasn't that long ago. That's the crazy thing. But yeah. So taking a break from all of the Cold War stuff, you do have the Peace Corps being established. And Kennedy, in one of his first acts as president, says, hey, let's create this thing called the Peace Corps. He says, hey, brother-in-law, Sergeant Shriver, come on over. Be the director of the Peace Corps. And it goes from 5,000 members to 10,000 members in under a year. And get this, Ben, over 200,000 Americans have joined the Peace Corps. That's a lot of people.
It is a lot of people.
So
I don't know how that relates to the rest of the military. I don't know what kind of numbers we even have. They probably don't announce that terribly much, do they?
I've never thought about that, but you think about it, you know, it's nothing for them to deploy 10,000 troops or 100,000 troops. So,
yeah, exactly. So you all have heard about, I mean, in Southeast Asia, there was just a lot of stuff going on. Of course, you know, we are all familiar with the Vietnam War the Korean conflict and those types of things. But before that, you had civil wars happening. I mean, before and during that, you had civil wars happening. You had assassinations of leaders. You had coups happening and everything. And at this time, you know, the Kennedy administration is pretty strongly considering the situation in Vietnam and assessing whether or not that the United States should intervene and get in there. Kennedy kind of knew that the people of Vietnam hated the U.S. and he didn't care, I guess. He was pretty insistent that, you know, the United States needed to go in to the territory in order to make sure the communists didn't seize it, and, you know, get more communist footing, because not only were the ideals and future of communism bad, but the fact is the communists tend to work together. And when you've got somebody like Russia, who at the time especially you're not terribly friendly with, having them have more allies is not something you want as the United States.
Yeah, so there's really no solution to the conflict, of course, at Kennedy's death, but nothing was more unfinished, I guess would be the right word, as far as foreign policy goes. You know, the tensions with the Soviet Union were alleviated a bit, or at least put off a bit. But when it came to Vietnam, this is something that President Johnson is going to have to deal with in a great way. But back to the Soviet Union, there's a famous speech that Kennedy gives at the American University, and the president says that the Soviets are willing to negotiate a nuclear test ban treaty, and that the U.S. is going to postpone some of the planned atmospheric tests that, that they were going to use to defend the country. And this peace through strength mentality really comes to the forefront in the Kennedy years.
So Kennedy is going to like go all around the world, and he's also going to have different dealings with people all around the world. And we've talked about that a little bit, about how he made his mark in that way. Something I wanted to say, and Jason, you may have noticed this as well when you were there, but when I was in Ireland, it was right after President Obama had visited Ireland. Mm-hmm. And everywhere you saw pictures of President Obama in Ireland, but also everywhere you went, well, even more places that you went, you saw pictures of JFK in Ireland. And he was only there for about 4 days, but it seems like there were enough pictures of him taken by like little shop owners and bar owners and pubs that there is just a picture in every single establishment. It's kind of crazy. But anyway, he was there, of course, for picking up some different documents, encouraging relationship between them, making sure that he visited the place, of course, where his ancestors had lived before they came to America, all that kind of stuff. But I just wanted to, like, from my personal experience, throw it out there that the Irish love American presidents that visit their country.
Yeah, they kind of do. It's interesting, too, just about the whole relationship with Ireland, because so many presidents who they may not have that direct connection like the Kennedys had, because, I mean, there it is, the Irish Catholic, you know, that it's very at the forefront. But so many of our presidents do have Irish ancestry. And, yeah, when you're leaving Ireland, actually, when you go through customs, you'll see a picture of all these famous Americans who have Irish in them. We have Irish in us, but I think we're Scots-Irish.
Yeah, I think so. Who knows? Yeah. Did you know JFK came to where I live?
No.
Yeah, there are pictures of him like less than a quarter mile from my house.
Really?
Yeah. He came to town and, you know, they had a little parade, and there's a few shops that are still around that were around then that have pictures of him in their shops.
Wow.
Yeah. I don't know why he was here, but
I'm sure Western PA was probably a important area to win over.
Yeah, I would say so.
Yeah, and you know, in Texas, where we were earlier in the year, there's so many places. Now, of course, you know, the whole incident of the assassination in Dallas, but he spent some time in Texas. He had to win it over, and of course, selecting Johnson as his vice president went a long way to sealing up that election for him.
Yeah, for sure. Another big thing to note is this is around the time that the big partial nuclear test ban treaty came into effect. Of course, Kennedy sends over someone to Moscow to help negotiate a treaty with the Soviet Union. And, well, basically they came to an understanding. It wasn't the understanding that everyone wanted, and it prohibited some of the testings that were happening, and both sides agreed to it. Whether or not they both lived up to it is a conversation for a different day, but the Senate ratified it, and Kennedy signed it into law in October of 1963, and France all of a sudden was like, hey, we're not part of this treaty. We're going to keep doing the testing and stuff, so sorry. You never hear about France and nukes, do you?
No, not really.
Interesting. Apparently nobody's afraid they're going to use them. I don't know.
Yeah. It's just a good old American thing to do, right?
that's right, yeah.
So about the civil rights movement, you know, we had a lot going on in 1954. In 1954, you had Brown versus the Board of Education, ends racial segregation in the public schools, but many of these schools in the South refused to acquiesce to the law of the land. And Kennedy takes a very strong approach when it comes to integrating schools. And in more than one occasion, he, his brother Robert, and others in the administration would reach out to the likes of Coretta Scott King and Martin Luther King Jr. and really hold the fact that, yes, we are going to be an integrated society. And this actually becomes one of Kennedy's great legacies, is that he appoints many African Americans to office. And one of the big appointments was to appoint civil rights attorney Thurgood Marshall to the federal bench.
Yeah, and the 60s are, well, one, there's a lot of things going for civil rights. I mean, you're seeing a lot of new things implemented for the civil rights movement and equality. But one of the really interesting things to me, Jason, and I found this out in high school, how many different people, like, who were pro-civil rights movement were assassinated. And, you know, we usually use the word assassinated for people who are in some sort of power or something, but when it comes to the civil rights movement, I mean, you have, of course, you have Martin Luther King Jr., who was assassinated, but you have a few other popular speakers during that time. So, of course, you have a lot of this kind of conversation happening, but it seems like an inordinate amount of murders also happen around the civil rights discussion, which is both interesting and obviously sad.
Yeah. Yeah, even the likes of J. Edgar. Now, I'm not saying J. Edgar Hoover, you know, was into assassinating people or anything like that, but he was suspicious of MLK Jr. and saw him as a troublemaker. And this led to suspicions between, you know, the executive branch and the FBI. And the FBI just says, hey, Robert Kennedy, John F. Kennedy, you need to quit associating with the likes of MLK Jr.
Yeah, it's through this. I mean, they really kind of tried to destroy a lot of his legacy. I don't know that any of the things they thought he was guilty of, but there have been some other reports of, you know, things in his personal life and relationships he had that may not have been above board, that this is the reason they found out about it, was because of Hoover and the FBI investigating him because they were, well, probably racist.
Yeah. Well, Well, there's a lot more to say about the Kennedy years. A lot happened in such a short period of time. So we will continue the discussion in the next episode.
Thanks for listening, everyone. If you want to help us out, the nicest thing you could do for us is to head over to iTunes and leave us a little review. You should know the way by now, but if not, Google the way. Google will show you the way. We would really appreciate a nice little review from you.
Yeah, and we'll see you next time.
Ohio, ready for some quick mental health facts? Let's go. Nearly 2 million Ohioans live with a mental health condition. In the U.S., more than 50% of people will be diagnosed with a mental illness in their lifetime. Depression is a leading cause of disability worldwide. So why are some of us still stigmatizing people living with a mental health condition when we know all of this? Let's listen to the facts and beat the stigma. Ohio, challenge what you know about mental health at beatthestigma.org.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.